Late Night City. And now, my story. Real people, real stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the most difficult interviews I've ever done. It's difficult because the gentleman I'm going to introduce worked with me. The gentleman became a friend. He's somebody I look on like a younger brother. We had a passionate relationship in work, as passionate for radio, and we fell out quite a few times, but we fell out for the good of the station and for the good of the radio. Who am I talking about? Well, the seat I'm sitting in right now, I made him do some links one particular night because the station had fallen apart, and I said, take over. He said, what do you mean? Take over. And that's how he started, actually, as a broadcaster rather than a producer. I'm very fond of him. It's Jay Hind, and I can't believe I'm finally interviewing you.
Hello. This is very strange. Do you know what's weirder is you calling me your little brother? What do you mean, grandson? Little brother.
It's not that much difference, ain't
it? You're only about 40 years, pricey.
Thanks for reminding me that.
No problem.
Jay, I'm thrilled you've come in because it is a serious thing we're talking about. Just first of all, before we talk about what has happened to you and how terribly poorly you've been, and thank goodness you've come out the other side, give them a potted history of who you are now.
Well, I was on Radio City, so worked here at Radio City up the tower, started straight from school, year 2000, helped out on the evening show, helped out on the weekend shows, then got very nicely and very kindly asked to produce Pete Price in the evening, which I'd done for 7 years, and me and you worked hard together. We fought all the time, but we'd done something really special on the radio, I think. You're still doing it today, fingers crossed. We done documentaries. I got to know all of your regular listeners, lovely Margaret in Highton and everything else, answering the phones for you. And then, as you said, you pushed me on one night to present myself. And from that point, I started presenting on my own on Radio City. So I'd done various shows across the station on the weekend, in the week, whatever. And then I moved to City Talk and produced some of that, some of them shows that come out of City Talk. And then from there, I got the dream job, the job I always wanted, and that was to produce The Breakfast Show with Rossi and Claire Simo, and it was Rossi and Co. And I'd done that for about 4 or 5 years until I left in 2013, I think it was. And then from there, I'd done various things, went to the BBC, went down to London, went to Birmingham and worked as a producer there. And then I come up here and done some local TV on a station that's no longer with us. And then I set up something called The Guide Liverpool, which I run now, which is an online magazine with lots of videos, multimedia platform across the city, kind of telling people what's going on in Liverpool.
And that is me. Actually, fabulous. I love The Guide.
Thank you.
You've done it really well. You've got a great team of staff working for you. You're an employee now. An employer.
Employer. Sounds weird, that, doesn't it?
And it really is great. So all that knowledge you've had and all the passion and love you have for the city is quite amazing. And it comes over loud and clear on The Guide. So I just think it is great.
Well, do you know what, Pete? I learned it all. Anything I have learned, if there is anything, I learned it all here at Radio City. Yeah. I'm producing this show for many years, and the different things. Every day is so different in radio when you're working in radio, especially on a station like Radio City. And I've fingers crossed, I think that's what I'm trying to do, is putting all that knowledge, all them contacts, all of that together to create something different. And that's The Guide Liverpool.
Now, 2012, Christmas Day, you nearly died. I mentioned on air several times that you were poorly, and all my listeners who loved you and still do and still ask about you, especially Roy.
And I know all the numbers. I still know Roy's number. I still know Wendy's phone number. I remember them all.
You didn't want me to tell everybody what was wrong with you at the time.
No.
And I understood that, and I honoured your wishes. But people were incredibly concerned. And I didn't realise how much I loved you until you nearly died. And incredibly fond of your family. Thank goodness you've got a wonderful family who stuck by you and amazing friends that were there for you. But you're now going to tell us a story. Why now?
Do you know what? I know me and you've spoke about it before, and you've kind of asked, you've asked me to come on before and talk about it. I've never ever wanted to talk about what happened and to go into detail about it, mainly because of the type of illness it was. And you know what? Why not now? I've grown up a lot since I was very ill, and I've realised as well that I think there's people. Hopefully, fingers crossed, even if we help one person, that there's people that will be listening who might be going through the symptoms that I had or might be further on. They might be past me in terms of that illness and what I've had done to me. And hopefully that will help someone. So fingers crossed. But why now? Why not?
I'm talking to Jay Hind. Let me tell you, if you don't know who he is, he's a very attractive guy. he dresses beautifully. He loves clothes, he loves fashion, he loves partying, he loves life. He's got a beautiful family who are incredibly supportive. He's got brothers and a sister, and that's the vision. So place the vision. How old are you now?
I'm now 34.
So he's 34, so you've got that picture. All of a sudden, something happened to him which changed his life forever. Start at the beginning and take as long as you want.
Okay. So, going back about 7 or 8 years now, I remember I used to be ill all the time. During my time when I was working here at Radio City, the boss used to think he's pulling another sickie, he's off again. But I was genuinely sick all the time and I could never work out why. So whether it was flu, I used to get tonsillitis all the time, I used to have colds all the time. And I just put it down to me partying a bit too hard at the weekends, maybe, or maybe not eating well. But another thing I was doing, I was also passing a lot of blood. So it kind of all come to a head. Funny enough, 2 weeks after I got that Radio City breakfast show gig, so I got the call to say I'd got it. I took ill again when I'd started on the breakfast show with Rossi, and I took ill quite bad. Went to the doctors. They told me they didn't know what it was, so on and so on. 2 weeks later, I went back to him, and he seen the state I was in. I told him I was still passing a lot of blood. I could hardly walk. I'd gone very, very skinny. And he said, you need to go to the Royal straight away. They'll be waiting for you. So I went to the Royal, had some tests done. I didn't know what was up with me. I thought I just had a flu. I genuinely didn't know what it was. Had some tests done and they told me there and then you've got something called colitis, ulcerative colitis, to which I didn't have a clue what that meant. I was like, what? What does that mean? And he told me it was a condition in your bowel and in your stomach, and it can make you very ill and you've probably had it for a long time and we need to treat it and we need to treat it quickly. So at that point, I was then in hospital in the Royal, in wards, I think it was 8X or 8Y, and I was there for about 6 weeks over Christmas. And they were telling me about this condition I'd had. I still didn't really understand what it was. Ulcerative colitis, there'll be people listening right now that have got it, or whose kids might have it, or, I hate to say, will probably get it in later life. It's a condition that affects your bowel, your rectum, your stomach, and it's part of the inflammatory bowel disease family. So it's kind of ulcers throughout your bowel, lesions on your bowel. I can't get into the full medical explanation as to what it is, but you kind of get in the picture. It makes you extremely tired, so fatigue is a big thing, and I used to be drained in a way where I couldn't even understand it. It's like jet lag times a million. You're just constantly knackered. Obviously, as I mentioned, you pass blood all the time. And as I mentioned, you get ill all the time. You're sick pretty much throughout the whole 12 months of your year. Pain is another thing in your stomach. So I was told then I had this condition. I'd have to be treated for it. So I was on, I think it was 17 tablets a day. So whilst I was producing the breakfast show with Rossi and Claire, doing lots of work and really loving it, and it was the one I always wanted, I had this really terrible, crappy illness. But Radio City were so supportive. Everyone here, the old boss who was here then, was great. And I got through it, and I made myself get through them 4 or 5 years on that breakfast show. And then they kind of always said to me, I was in and out of hospital all the time, some of the medication that I was on, I'd have to go in and get regular tests and regular blood tests. They always kind of warned me, they always kind of said, you know, it probably will come a day, you've got the condition that bad, that you will lose your bowel. And at first when I heard that, I was like, how can you live without a bowel? What? And I know this might sound a bit disgusting talking about bowels and stuff like that, but I'm trying to explain it as best I can. And I didn't understand how that could happen, how you could lose a bowel and carry on living. And they told me that your condition is that severe that will happen. So in my head, I remember saying to Molly, who works here, if I can get to 40, but at this point I was 27, if I can get to 40 and not have lost my bowel, then I'll be happy because I will have had my younger life. I'll still be able to go to Glastonbury. I'll still be able to go to Ibiza. I'll still be able to focus on my career, because to me, losing my bowel was the end of everything. I wouldn't be able to continue. I wouldn't be able to live my life happy. It was just kind of a place I didn't want to have to get to, which I'm sure you can understand. So anyways, I was working one night and Radio City Live was on in the arena. And I used to do all the backstage interviews at the arena, which I love doing, as you know. And we used to film them and put them online. And we had some big stars at the arena this night. I think like Jesse J was on, and McFly and Little Mix and everyone else. And I felt really ill. Now, what I didn't tell anyone, I'd actually had to go to hospital that day, and they admitted me to hospital. And they said, "You're not good. We need to get you in and do some tests." I said, "No way. I'm interviewing Jesse J tonight for Radio City. I'm going to Radio City Live and I'm doing the interviews." Felt horrendous. Anyways, gets through it. Don't know how I did. Gets to hospital the next morning. They admitted me there and then, and they told me that your bowel has perforated. And they said, "We don't know how you've got this far." You said, "If we don't remove your bowel in 4 hours, you're going to die." To which I was like, "What?" So I was 31 at this point, 30 years old.
Jay, let me hold you down. You've been told if you don't get the bowel out, you're going to die. 31 years old. Let me just take a break. It's Radio City 2, Radio City Talk. I'm talking to Jay Hind. Jay, how did you feel when they said, if we don't remove it, you're going to die?
To be honest, at that point, I was in that much pain, I wanted to die. Because the pain that you feel when your bowel perforates is pretty intense. And I didn't know what was going on. Didn't know what was going on anyway with the pain relief I was on. So they said, "You've got to get this surgery," to which I was obviously really upset and distraught. Next minute, I know I'm signing away my life, as you do for any operation, you know, whether you're getting a broken finger seen to, you know, you've got to sign your life away, sign the disclaimers, everything else, so you can go and have the surgery in case anything does go wrong.
Let me stop you there.
Go on.
I want to ask you now, because you come from an old-fashioned Liverpool family, a beautiful family that really have family values, how the hell were they dealing with it?
My mum and dad were obviously in shock, a lot of shock. You know, they were there for me. On the day that it all happened, I don't really know. I think they just wanted to get me to surgery because I'd been told that I had a few hours to go if anything was to happen. They just wanted to get me in and out of surgery as quickly as possible. So they took me to surgery. I remember going under. Best feeling in the world, by the way, if you ever have an op. And you get all the drugs going through for about 20 seconds. It feels really good. But then when I woke up, I didn't feel so good. That's when the illness really took hold, and it was a kind of different illness altogether then. When I come round, the first 12 hours or so, I was still very much out of it. But then I developed something called paralytic ilia, and this is what made me ill. This is what made me have to take so long off work and everything else. Basically, they removed my whole bowel, which is your large intestine, so that had all gone. And they create you a stoma, which is a kind of, I describe it as a piece of intestine hanging out my belly with a plastic bag over it, which is kind of what it is. That part of my body after the operation shut down. It fell asleep. And the doctor said to me when I did come round, he said, "We're really sorry to say, but your mouth has now become your bowel." So I was, and this is where it gets a little bit crude, so apologies if you're having a late supper right now, vomiting. Literally every 20 minutes for 5 weeks. Vomiting. Obviously, you can't eat, so I don't know where it was coming from. I had to have a tube up my nose to kind of clear that and drain my stomach.
So your mouth became your backside?
Yeah, which was when they said that, I obviously vomited again near enough in his face. But all I will say about this moment is I've never felt, and I didn't know, a human being could be as ill as that until I went through it, and I was gobsmacked at what the human body can go through and still be alive, because I didn't know. Every split second you are thinking, I'm going to be dead in 5 minutes, definitely.
You must have questioned everything when you were lying there.
Mm.
You must have questioned your mortality, you must have questioned why me, and also a young man. Because a lot of young people are getting this now,
yeah,
aren't they?
That went on for about 3 weeks. I was on high dependency in the Royal, who, again, it was Ward 11. Why, I've just got to say a big hello to them, because the nurses, the doctors, the porters, the girl who comes and does the blood, the cleaners, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be sat here now. And you can say what you want about the Royal, but the staff over there in that building, my God, they saved my life, and they put me back together, and they were brilliant. And they still are to this day, because obviously I'm still under them.
Let me stop you there and ask you, did you want to die?
Yeah, every second of every minute of every day. When you're that ill, and I can, people say to me, well, what was it like? You can't explain it. You genuinely can't explain it. And I always think to myself, try and make myself feel like that again to try and remember what it was like, so I can expect, and it's just impossible. I don't think I'll ever be that ill ever again, God forbid, touch wood. I hope no one listening to this show is, because it was horrendous. Constantly vomiting, obviously, you know, I was stitched because it was emergency surgery. The scarring isn't so great. I was stitched from bottom to top with metal clips, so vomiting while you're in that situation anyway isn't the greatest, so they're constantly checked. But just that constant feeling of complete and utter illness, and the constant vomiting, and the tube up your nose, the tube up in your mouth to drain out. It wasn't pretty.
When did you start seeing light at the end of the tunnel?
It was the week, well, a few days before Christmas, and I was constantly getting taken down for scans to see what was going on, and I started feeling a little bit better again. Still on the high dependency ward. They thought I was getting better. I can't even remember the moment when I did feel better. Still hadn't eaten anything, so I was now getting drip fed, obviously. And I got better, and I thought they would let me out for Christmas Day, just for the day. And I'm not going to go into what happened, but there was a mistake made, which was a mistake. You know, it was no one's fault. These things happen, and I took ill again. But I was 10 times worse when I got ill. So the worst day I had, funny enough, was Christmas Day. So I was lying in the hospital bed, and, you know, the nurses all had hats on and everything else, and I was just completely out of it. And that was the day that they told me, again, they nearly lost me. I remember my mate coming in with reindeer ears on to see me on Christmas Day, and she walked in, looked at me, took the ears off and started crying. That's how bad I was. I was pretty bad. To be honest, I couldn't tell you about Christmas Day. I can't remember it.
When did you discover your new best friend, as you put it, which is interesting the way you put it?
When I was that ill in hospital, you know, it's there. You've got tubes coming out of every orifice, literally everywhere. There's tubes and there's pouches and there's machines and everything else. But I knew something was there on my stomach, and I thought, that's probably what it is. Is that what that is? I don't know. What I didn't really understand it. There's, when you have to get an ostomy or an ileostomy, you have special nurses that work with you. So there's a gang of ladies in the Royal. You've got to say a big hello to Joan and to Eunice, and to a few of the other girls over there, who are specialist ostomy nurses. So they kind of come and they teach you what it is, what it does.
And what is it?
As I mentioned, I've got that piece of intestine hanging out the bottom right side of my stomach. That is where the waste, I don't want to say the other word, comes. It's different waste to what you would have. It's completely different. It comes out of there, and the bag is kind of what protects that from getting out. So it's completely sealed, completely covered. You can't smell it. Well, I hope you can't anyway. And there's a Velcro pouch at the bottom of it, and that's how I drain it.
Are there many people with this problem?
They say there are 1 in 420 people living in the UK with ulcerative colitis. That doesn't sound like a lot. It is. And it's funny, when I got better, which took a while, as you know, I got out of hospital mid-January, obviously coming to terms then with having the bag and everything else and thinking, oh my God, what's going on? For me at that point, it was just relief. So even though I spent years dreading this bag, thinking it would change everything, my life would be over and I'd rather die than have a bag, because I went through such a traumatic time and I was in hospital and was so ill, I realised it saved my life and I was happy to have the bag, and you know, it didn't become such a negative thing to me. It became a positive thing, because I thought, if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be, you know, I'd be dead.
Now, it's small, isn't it? It's not a big, ugly thing. Years ago, they were horrendous. Mm. But now, it's just, it's like a little pouch, isn't
it? It's just like a pouch. Don't get me wrong, it's not something I like to flash everywhere. It's sometimes difficult if I'm presenting on stage or you know, in front of cameras or whatever, but it's just about how you get around it and how you cover it up. The only times I have problems with it are when I'm on holiday, and relationships can sometimes be tricky, but other than that, I haven't had one single problem at all.
And there's been a lot of publicity lately about it, hasn't there? There's been a bodybuilder in particular.
The Raz, he's done great things. He's done well. I think he wasn't so good, you know, not so long back, but he done wonders for it, because obviously he put the message out that it's absolutely fine to have one. They're not a problem. They're not as ugly as what people think. So, more and more people are becoming aware, hence why I'm chatting to you now.
Tell me, putting it nicely, as you've done anyway, what is your day? Tell me what your day is over that side of it.
You can change. It's funny, in America, they say to change, they get told by health professionals there to change them once a week, because they haven't got the money in terms of a health service over there. For us in the UK, where we're obviously luckier, I change it every other day. So a day of changing it, I change it in the shower, whack it on. The it sounds like you kind of think to yourself, and this is what I thought at first, how can it stick on? It must fall off. It must go. It doesn't. It's like super glue stuck to your stomach. There's no way of it coming off. So you change my day. It's just completely normal.
Now, you say it's like a super glue. How do you get it off then?
So we got a spray. You get sent a spray, which is adhesive remover spray, and you just spray that on and you just pull it off. Simple, dead easy. And there's some great companies out there that you know, I phone up to get my repeat prescriptions from, to get all the equipment and all the apparatus I need to do it.
Now, what happens when you go swimming on holidays?
Well, swimming is I used to go to the gym quite a lot. That's one of the things I kind of struggle with a little bit now, just in terms of you can get to that point and your stomach hurts a little bit, but it's fine. So I swim a lot now and it's absolutely fine. On holiday, it's different, because obviously you're getting your top off in front of people, which is something I haven't been comfortable with just yet, but I'm sure I'll get to one day. But it's funny, I was away last year and there was a woman, about 40 odd, lovely, lovely looking woman, dead attractive. And I was moaning to my mates, I'm not taking my top off. I'm not getting my top off here with this and all that. Being a whinger basically for a week about it. And there's this woman, she was a mum, in the pool every day, and she had a strap around it, and I was talking to her, and it turns out she's got exactly the same as me, went through the same as me. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's really not. And what I've got to say, Pete, at this point is, before I had the op, I was ill for a long time, and I didn't realise how ill I was until after the op, when I got better. So a holiday for me, and you know me, I used to go clubbing in Ibiza all the time and be in Glastonbury all the time. There was one time I went to Glastonbury and I used the Portaloo in one day 34 times. Now I can go to Glastonbury and I don't have to worry. I haven't got any worries about going to Ibiza. I don't have to be checking where the toilet is, or because I'm not ill anymore. I'm not. So I've got my life back, if you like. Yeah, I've been left with this, but in terms of my health and everything else, I've got my life back.
Just going back to the swimming, so you wear just a swimming costume and you can see the bag or not?
Yeah, you can see it, yeah. So you've got your top off, you can see it. Completely waterproof, completely seal proof, nothing can get out, nothing can get in.
Do people have a comment?
There's been a few, but we're getting into you.
Yeah,
not a nasty, not a negative, you know. One place that you always get comments is going through security at the airport. Because you have to be certain. If I go through a body scanner, that obviously comes up. I won't lie, over in America, where I've been a few times the past couple of years, they're not as sensitive to the issue as what they are here in the UK. And I've got to say, by the way, if anyone's listening from Liverpool Airport, the security team in Liverpool Airport dealing with this, you know, and I try and go on my jollies as much as I can, are phenomenal. They are superb.
How has it changed your life?
I'm better now, Pete. I'm happier. obviously that first 6 months, that first year was difficult. And when I got better, I come back to work and I come back to Radio City, back on the breakfast show. Couldn't wait to get back. Went back 6 weeks earlier than what my doctors had told me to which our old boss, Richard, wasn't very happy with. I come back too early, I think, and then I left Radio City altogether. And I still put that down to I wasn't well enough to be here. Simple as that. But a few months after that, when I got my head together a bit, my life's never been better. I'm happier than I've ever been, and I'm healthier than I've ever been, ever. Don't get me wrong, you still have good and bad days in terms of how you feel, in terms of, you know, pain, discomfort, whatever. But it's nothing like what it was when I had that, when I had that bowel.
Can you still party?
Yeah.
No, you do party.
Yeah, of course I can. Can do whatever I want.
What can you eat and not eat?
When
you have problems with a couple of things.
Yeah, when you've got a stoma, you've just got to be careful. And what I've got to say as well with ulcerative colitis, and I want to talk about this in a sec in terms of anyone who thinks they might have it. When you've got a stoma, everyone's different. So for me, I've got to avoid anything that I can't digest because it will just come through the bag. And sometimes, so I can't have any nuts, for instance. I can't have vegetables that aren't cooked. So broccoli or asparagus or whatever that's not cooked. Sweet corn can be difficult. Peppers can be difficult. Spicy food is still a bit of an issue. But it's just about being, you know, realistic with what you can and can't eat. It's trial and error. So if I want to go to the pictures and have popcorn, which I know hurts me a little bit the next day, then I will do. But I know for a fact I can't have walnuts or peanuts because I could end up back in hospital with that. If I get a blockage of my stoma that intense, you know, it's not nice.
Now, I'm sure a lot of people out there, like myself, would like to know, because I'm curious about what you're going to tell us over this, and do you just empty the bag, or do you throw the bag away, or you put another bag in, or what?
So what you're thinking of there is a colostomy bag. So a colostomy bag is different.
So it's totally different.
Yeah.
Right, great. So I didn't know that.
A colostomy bag is if someone might have had bowel cancer, for instance, they'll get part of their bowel taken away, and obviously it's still, you're in exactly the same position as me, you've still got all that head messing about thinking, oh my god, I'm not going to live with that, but you've still got a bit of bowel to produce a full stool. I haven't got that. I haven't got any bowel, so mine's an ileostomy. I think I'm getting this right. Mine's an ileostomy, so my waste comes from further up my stomach, so I can't produce a stool, or so mine is literally just waste, and it can be really watery. Yeah. It's just waste, and to empty mine's constant emptying.
Just pour it down the toilet.
You sit on the loo, so I have sit down wheeze all the time now, lads. If you see me out and about, that's why I'm going in the cubicle. I have sit down wheeze, and I empty it when I'm sat down. Simple as that. Dead simple easy. Dead easy.
Jay, we could talk about this for hours. To finish off, what advice would you give to people out there? Because as you said, you were ill and didn't realise.
Mm.
You've been to hell and back and died a couple of times nearly, but now you're leaving a normal life.
Completely, yeah.
What'd you say to
completely people out there? Okay. Firstly, for anyone that thinks they might have what I've been talking about, ulcerative colitis or a bowel condition or a stomach condition, if you're passing blood for a long amount of time, you need to go and see a doctor. End the chat. Don't mess about. It could be anything, but it could be something serious. Just get in and see a doctor. If you're feeling tired with that as well, so if you're feeling constantly drained, constantly knackered, and you don't know why, get in and see a doctor. If you're sick all the time, you get the flu, and you get colds, and you get tonsillitis, and you get everything else all the time, get in and see a doctor. It could be anything, but it could be ulcerative colitis. So there's obviously a lot of symptoms that go with it. Everyone's different as well. But just go and see someone. And if you have got it, it's not the end of the world to get surgery. And that's what I thought. I thought, my God, my life's going to be over if I have to get surgery and have to get this removed. It's not. It's not like that at all. You go, you get it done. Yeah, it's not great when you're getting it done, but afterwards you get your life back. And that's what I've got.
This is the first time you've ever spoken publicly. How do you feel now you've told us a story?
I don't really know, to be honest. Yeah, I just hope I've helped someone. I've probably messed a lot of what I've just said up in terms of getting the medical terms and everything right. But yeah, hopefully I've helped someone listening. And as I say, if you're worried about someone or you think you might have it, just get in and see someone. And if you have got it, them dark days that I know you go through sometimes, you know, they can be sorted in a flash. And that surgery that you will be warned about right now is not the end of the world. And I hope that listening to my story, it hasn't painted an even worse picture in your head, because, as I say, look at me now. I'm happier than I've ever been.